From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon. As it may be, wherever you are around the globe, all our time zones, every single one of them, covered like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. It is my honor and privilege to be continuing to escort you through the weekend. Let's look at the news, and actually there's not a depressing thing, or is there? Depending, I guess, on your point of view as the first item. Only in America do you get a football story as a lead item. A comeback. A drive. A legacy. And yes, finally, Peyton Manning gets his Super Bowl trip. So does Tony Dungy. Football's most prolific quarterback put on a show for the ages today, rallying the Indianapolis Colts from 18 points down. Don't think that's ever happened before in this kind of playoff game. Driving them 80 yards for the winning score and a wildly entertaining 38-34 victory over the New England Patriots. Sorry, New England, but you did whip, and you shouldn't have whooped the San Diego Chargers. So can't say I'm sorry. In his 9 years in the league, Manning has never played in a game like this AFC Championship contest. There you go. He threw for 349 yards, one touchdown, brought his team back from a 21-3 deficit. That makes it the biggest comeback. There you go, in conference title game history. Iraq's prime minister has dropped his protection of an anti-American cleric's Shiite militia after U.S. intelligence convinced him the group was infiltrated by death squads. That's according to two officials on Sunday. In a desperate bid to fend off an all-out American offensive, the radical cleric Friday ordered the 30 lawmakers and six cabinet ministers under his control to end their nearly two-month boycott of the government. They were, in fact, back at their job Sunday. Police and federal agents extended the search to Chicago on Sunday for four children and their mother, whose ex-boyfriend, authorities say, shot a man, kidnapped them in Indiana the day before. Authorities have issued an Amber Alert, said the children and their mother, 31-year-old Kimberly N. Walker, were in extreme danger. And, of course, the Chicago Bears know how to make a Super Bowl memorable. They're making this one historic long before it's played. Dissed all season long, Rex Grossman and company are heading to the big game for the first time since 85 after rolling over New Orleans 39-14. So that should make it a very interesting Super Bowl, I would expect. A year after warning America of its addiction to oil, President Bush is expected to renew concerns about security in his State of the Union address. But will the rhetoric be followed by action? Up until now, the record has been somewhat mixed. Aides hint of a major pronouncement on energy in the speech before Congress and the nation Tuesday night, yet the president is expected to take a predictable path, urging expanded use of ethanol and gas, more research into cleaner burning coal, and on gas, electric, hybrid cars, and of course, nuclear energy. The Taliban said they're going to open their own schools in areas of southern Afghanistan under the group's control, an apparent effort to win support among local residents, then as well undermine the Western-backed government's efforts to expand education. Just what we need. President Hugo Chavez told U.S. officials to go to hell. Go to hell, gringos, actually, is the precise quote. Go to hell, gringos, and called Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, Missy, on his weekly radio and TV show Sunday, Missy, lashing out at Washington for what he called unacceptable meddling in Venezuelan affairs. The tirade came after Washington raised concerns about a measure to grant the fiery leftist leader broad lawmaking powers. The National Assembly, which is controlled by the president's political allies, is expected to give final approval this week to what it calls the enabling law, which would give Chavez the authority to pass a series of laws by decree during an 18-month period. The footage is indeed shocking. A man lies screaming on the floor of a police station as officers sodomize him with a wooden pole. Compounding that shock, it turns out it was the police who made the film, and then they transmitted it to the cell phones of the victim's friends to humiliate him. All in Cairo, Egypt. In a moment, as Paul, I believe, does say, the rest of the story. Well, all right, John J. Harper is coming at the top of the hour. We're going to take calls, though, open lines, here in just a few moments. Now, last night I read you what I consider, and Whitley Strieber considers, an extremely important story. Now, I think that I found the source of that story, and I want you to hear some of it, because it's going to relate to what we're going to talk about tonight. A headline, Superstorm Sweeps Northern Hemisphere After Massive Solar Blast. By the way, it was snowing in Phoenix today. Russian scientists have become very alarmed this past week after an unprecedented massive superstorm hit the northern hemisphere of our planet, causing widespread destruction and death. From record windstorms assaulting northern Europe and the British Isles, to the destruction of California's citrus crops, to the devastating snow and ice storms still assaulting the North American continent, from the Gulf of Mexico to the Canadian prime maritime provinces, at no time in recorded history, at least according to Russian scientific reports, has our world ever experienced such catastrophic weather on such a global scale over such a short period of time. The director of Russia's Pavlova Observatory, Dr. Scientist Alberto Abduzumov, I believe it is, has further blamed this superstorm on what he says was the massive electrical imbalance created by the interaction of the Red Cow comet, which is currently traversing our inner solar system, and our sun, which on January 15th caused a massive solar flare on the far side of the sun. It was really big. The doctor scientist has further warned that Western scientists and governments are keeping from their citizens the full extent and dangers of our Earth's rising temperatures, and which the West continues to blame on human activity, raising the levels of greenhouse gases, but which the doctor scientist states is actually due to the imbalances of our own sun. He further warns that not only is our own Earth heating up, but also the other planets in the solar system, and which the greatest long-term danger lies not in our world continuing to heat up, but instead for massive cooling to begin overtaking us. And he's been quoted as saying, global warming results not from the emission of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, but from an unusually high level of solar radiation and a lengthy, almost throughout the last century, growth in its intensity. It is no secret that when they go up, temperatures in the world's oceans trigger the emission of large amounts of carbon dioxide into our atmosphere. So the common view that man's industrial activity is a deciding factor in global warming has emerged from a misinterpretation of cause and effect relations. Ascribing greenhouse effect properties to the Earth's atmosphere is not scientifically substantiated, says he. Heated greenhouse gases, which become lighter as a result of expansion, ascend to the atmosphere only to give the absorbed heat away. Instead of professed global warming, the Earth, he says, will be facing a slow decrease in temperatures in 2012 to 2015, the gradual falling amounts of solar energy expected to reach their bottom level by 2040 will inevitably lead to a deep freeze around 2055 to 60, he said, adding the period between of global freeze will last about 50 years, after which temperatures will go up again. Supporting the scientists' research was the was unreported in the West stoppage of the Gulf Stream waters of the Atlantic Ocean on December 11th. It lasted for 8 days, ending on December 19th, which saw this massive ocean current turn suddenly to the south from its normal pattern towards northern European waters. These reports further detail that should the Gulf Stream waters cease flowing to Europe altogether, a catastrophic situation would overtake the continent, causing massive crop failures and the mass migrations of Europeans to the southern nations of the European Union. Of all these events, perhaps no nation is to be more affected than the United States. After their massive loss of California crops, and which is on top of the massive crop failures they experienced this past summer, and as we had previously reported on our August 26th report titled Devastation Looms as the U.S. Economy Implodes Amidst Near-Total Crop Failures in North America. More disturbing, however, remains the propaganda media clampdown imposed on the American people by their military leaders, and who believe that by keeping the truth of the dire state of our world in what they will avert mass panic, some of this is in the translation, before they are ready to institute full police state measures against their citizens. Well, I don't know about that, but I suppose there would be a clampdown. The greatest danger, therefore, for these people remains that without sufficient knowledge of what will happen, they will remain what they are now, unprepared and ignorant of the true dangers facing them. So in other words, this top Russian scientist feels that our own sun, not greenhouse gases, are responsible for the change in weather. And I personally don't know. I watched a little bit earlier on the Weather Channel. Apparently, the chief meteorologist of the Weather Channel had put together a blog, which was highly controversial, in which he commented on the obviously changing weather, and she caught hell for it. Absolute hell for it. But she too ascribed it to not the sun in her case, but carbon emissions from all of us. I guess I'll put it that way. At any rate, she really caught it. And so not all scientists are yet on board, but one thing does seem clear. It's occurring. The weather is changing. It snowed today in Phoenix. Big, heavy flakes in Phoenix. So we're going through it. What's causing it? We can debate until the last crop, the last bit of citrus is gone in California. Went to the grocery store. After the show last night, we actually went to the grocery store. Now, that's something Aaron is not used to, and most people, I suppose, are not. But here in Nevada, most grocery stores and restaurants remain open 24 hours a day. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, we went shopping. And we looked for some things you might expect to be on the shelves, and they were not. We were told by the grocer that it was because of the massive crop failures in California. So there you have it. By the way, the webcam photo remains my three furry ones. My little Filipino adoptee has got a cold. Now, I guess cats catch colds like anybody else, but she is sneezing. So I suppose cats, like human beings, getting on an airplane and having to fly from one side of the world to the other, and they really made a trip going through Europe and then all the way across. Actually, I suppose they came over the pole to get to L.A. Anyway, however they got here from Europe and then the far Pacific, Southeast Asia, it's a long trip. And I generally get colds, no exception this time. I have one. I'm working on one right now. But she has been sneezing, so I suppose if it keeps up, off to the vet with her, we will go. All right, let us begin seeing what awaits in the night. One never knows. First-time caller line, James in Kansas. You're on the air.
Hey, Art. How you doing?
I'm quite well.
Man, I just want to say it's an honor to actually be speaking with you.
Thank you.
I've been a listener since I was probably 17. But I want to talk to you about something I seen once a couple 5 years ago, and a friend of mine was actually with me. He's seen the same thing. It was a silhouette. It looked like it was dark out, and we were standing around a truck. You know, Osawatomie, Kansas is a very small town, so we was out in the fields, and I seen this, what appeared to be like a silhouette of a helicopter, and, you know, I looked at it, and I didn't think none of it. Went back to talk to my friend, and my brain processed. I was like, that's not right. What you just seen is not right. There's no noise, and it just didn't look right. And I looked back at it and pointed it out to my friend Josh. He's like, yeah, what is that, you know? And it shifted shapes. And, what you know, I've seen other people talk about this on TV shows and kind of drew what I've seen, and it just kind of moved around, and it took off, and we were like, wow. And I didn't know if you knew anything about that. Has anybody ever talked to you about something like that or anything?
No, they haven't. Well, I mean, I've heard a little bit, James, about shape-shifting stuff, but it occurs to me that if you're an alien craft and you're observing Earth, what better way could there be to do it other than shape-shifting and turning yourself into a traditional aircraft? Something that nobody would be alarmed at seeing. For example, a helicopter. So if you could shape-shift, if you could make yourself into something that nobody would be alarmed at seeing, well, we all know if you look up and see a saucer flitting across the sky at unreasonable speeds, you're going to get noticed. But if you look like a helicopter, nobody's going to give you a second look. Do we ever consider, or a 747, traversing the sky with a little bit of trail behind it, 40,000 feet? Nobody'd notice that, would they? But a saucer? Oh, yes. West of the Rockies in Phoenix, where I hear it snowed. Kirk?
You know what? It's Kurt, C-U-R-T, Kurt.
Okay.
Hey, could I ask you where you would go if you time traveled, and then I tell you where I'd go?
Yeah, I've already said many. I've said many times. And by the way, she typed K-I-R-K, so I'm sorry, Kurt. I would go back to the time. Yes, you've listened, so you already knew.
I know, but I just wanted to hear you say it again. I haven't heard you for a long time say that.
Yeah, I would want to know. Look, we've got the Bible. We all know about Jesus. Would I want to see it with my own eyes? Man, you bet. How about you? Kirk, where'd you go, Kirk?
1963, and I would be at the fence.
Wait a minute, start again. Somebody's, Kirk, hold it, hold it, hold it. Kirk, stop.
Okay.
Somebody didn't pot you up or had you potted down, so start again. I want to know where you would go if you were to time travel.
November 22nd, 1963, I would pop over there and be on the grassy knoll, and that Lincoln Continental with Jackie waving. Dude, I would kick ass behind that fence there. If there are people up there with guns, they'll be all kicked ass. I would, and they wouldn't do that to him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's gone. What if you got to the grassy knoll and there was nobody there? I mean, that's kind of like it's kind of like the Bible in a way. What if I got all the way back to the time of Jesus and nothing was as written? How disappointing would that be? Mark, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you're on the air.
Good evening. How are
Good
you?
Good evening. All right.
Hey, I wanted to throw this at you. I know that you're into the whole spooky action at a distance issue.
Yes.
You're familiar with the EPR paradox?
EPR?
Einstein, Podolsky, Rosen. That's
oh, yes, yes, okay, okay.
That's the thing that, you know, they said basically, hey, right. Let's bounce these electrons, right. Spinning electrons away from each other, and if we flip one and the other one flips faster than
right.
The speed of
right.
Light could go in between. Well, I have this theory. They basically talk a lot about the fact that, or their theory that you can't communicate information if you do such a thing.
Apparently not.
But here's the thing. If you were to have an alien species that would travel throughout space or sprinkle out throughout their travels, von Neumann probes, which are basically set up nearby possible planets or planets that could have life in the future, so that if anything happened, they would send a signal back home,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, straight out of 2001, A Space Odyssey, as far as...
Sure.
Well, here's the thing. You may not be able to transmit information. You may not be able to tap out a Morse code and say, hey, there's humans here. We should come here and kick their butts. But if anything was to happen, and if that device was to pick up, say, a nuclear explosion in 1945,
right,
or something along those lines, that device, if it had been left there, if when it was created by those alien beings who left it on this planet, if it was created in association with other devices so that they all had the sort of co-entangled electrons.
Yeah, I get where you're going. I want you to listen after the break, buddy, because I've got something for you coming up right after the break, right down the road you were going down. I just happen to have it sitting right here. What an incredible coincidence. From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I'm Art Bell. Well, all right, this is, as promised, for my last caller. It ranks among the most enduring mysteries of the cosmos. Physicists call it the Fermi paradox after Italian Nobel laureate Enrico Fermi. Back in 1950, he pointed out the glaring conflict between predictions that life was elsewhere in the universe and the conspicuous lack of, well, aliens who've come to visit. Now, a Danish researcher believes he may have solved the paradox. Extraterrestrials have yet to find us because they, well, just haven't had enough time to look. Using a computer simulation of our own galaxy, the Milky Way, a physicist at the Niels Bohr Institute in Copenhagen proposed that a single civilization might build 8 intergalactic probes, launch them on missions to search for life. Once on their way, each probe would send out 8 more mini probes, which would head for the nearest stars that look for habitable planets. Mr. Bohr confined the probes to search only solar systems in what is called the galactic habitable zone of the Milky Way. That would be where solar systems are close enough to the center to have the right elements necessary to form rocky, life-sustaining planets, but are far enough out to avoid being struck by asteroids, seared by stars, or frazzled by bursts of radiation. Well, he found that even if the ships could hurtle through space at a tenth of the speed of light, that'd be about 30,000 kilometers a second. NASA's current Cassini mission to Saturn is plodding along at 32 kilometers a second. It would take 10 billion years, roughly half the age of the universe, to explore 4% of the galaxy. His study is reported in the prestigious New Scientist today. Like humans, alien civilizations could shorten the time to find extraterrestrials by picking up TV and radio broadcasts that might leak from colonized planets. Even then, unless they can develop an exotic form of transport that gets them all across the galaxy in about 2 weeks, it's still going to take millions of years to find us. He said there are so many stars in the galaxy that probable life could exist everywhere, elsewhere. But will we ever get in contact with them? Not, he says, in our lifetime. We'll be right back. And now, back to the lines. It's Andy in Wisconsin on a wild card line. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Art. How are you?
Fine.
Okay, I just wanted to bring up, in the beginning of your show, you had mentioned about the Weather Channel's meteorologist.
That's right.
That said she, you know, she caught hell for her comments.
That's right.
But what actually happened was the reason for this was that she was actually bringing up comments about censoring other scientists that did not necessarily agree with her viewpoint that man is causing this. She was stating that anyone who would believe that man has no influence in the global warming process that's going on should be censored. And that's why she was getting it, because I mean, it's got to raise an eyebrow when you have a scientist not wanting, commentary or inquiry on all different aspects of what could be causing it. And that's
what raises my eyebrows is when, the scientists are welcome to have whatever view they want. But when our government begins to censor the scientists, then I get scared.
Exactly. But a lot of the people were writing in on that blog because of her comments about that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have one other comment, if you have time.
I do.
Okay. We had brought up about the alien presences on other or life elsewhere in the universe.
Yes.
And I would see it this way. This is the first time that I actually hear, the scientific community comes out and makes statements like, for instance, like, quote, You know, it would be stupid. We hear it all the time. It would be stupid to believe that we're alone in the universe and so on. And, I mean, that it could be that we aren't. But for a scientist to make that type of comment or opinion, I think goes against the scientific method. I mean, it would be like this. Right now, that's all that I know is there's one Art Bell out there. And until you meet another you, like if you came across another you, you can extrapolate that, well, there's two of us, so there could be many of us. Until that, we have to say that Art Bell is unique. And that could be with life in general. Until we actually find life or evidence of life on another planet, so on, in other than anecdotal evidence, we have to, or it would be safe to assume that we are unique. And the only way, I mean, to make it as a given.
Yes, but wait a minute. There are mathematical approaches to this that are very scientific that say there almost has to be life out there.
But then would there almost have to be another Art Bell out there? Because there are billions and billions of stars. Who is to say that you are not unique? The only way we can say that is because we only have evidence of one you. You follow what I'm saying, though.
I do.
I'm not saying there isn't life on other planets, but I don't think we can't lower, you know, our scientific methodology to just be like, well, it would be stupid not to believe that there is life elsewhere.
Isn't that like going out a little west of Hawaii and looking at the ocean as far as you can see, and saying, look, I can only see out there. Therefore, there's only water out there, and until I see water past there, I can't believe and can't know there is water past there.
Exactly. And before we actually did exploration, and we were very, you know, European-centric at the time, we were at least, we did not necessarily have any scientific reason to believe that there would be necessarily life in, say, the new country in the Americas. Once we did make that exploration to find out, now we can extrapolate and say, well, there's life on other continents, therefore there's probably life on another continent. And until we can actually do that from another planet, I don't think that we can necessarily scientifically be honest with ourselves and say that, yes, there's definitely got to be life on other planets.
If you look at probabilities, the probabilities are there is life out there.
But the probabilities have to be based upon actually seeing if there is, because there could be unique. If we use probabilities, the probabilities would say that if the universe is infinite, with an infinite amount of different areas you can go, there could possibly be another Art Bell out there. But I wouldn't believe that until we actually found one. And if we did find one, then I can extrapolate and say, you know what, there could be a billion Art Bells out there. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. I wish you wouldn't use me as an analogy, but
I'll use me, another Andy out there. Until I actually have evidence of that, I cannot make that type of comment.
All right. I hear what you're saying. I don't agree with it. I think that lacking the scientific evidence, one way or the other, all we can do is operate on probabilities. I mean, we do know some things on which to base those probabilities. We know there are an infinite number of suns, or if you will, stars. We now know around those stars, probably most, if not all of them, or the majority of them, there are planets rotating. So given those numbers, it's fair to work with probabilities with regard to the possibility of life. God, I hope we're not alone. Don't you? Wouldn't it be somehow tragic, and wouldn't it feel awfully lonely if the final conclusion was we honestly are totally alone? Wouldn't that be a little much? International line, Mike in Ontario.
Hi, Mr. Bell. Thanks for having me. Excuse my scratchy throat. I'm feeling a little under the weather today.
Well, like our cat.
Our weather's erratic up here in Ontario as well. We had a late winter, and it started in mid-January, like 2 weeks ago.
I'm sorry to hear that. I don't think that, you know, I have so many people tell me, including my own wife, that it's cold that causes colds. Well, it's not. Oh. It's viruses. But I suppose cold can make you a little more susceptible to a virus.
It depletes your immune system.
Yeah.
These climactic changes we're having, I've been pondering these thoughts about maybe some causes what would stimulate it. Mars passing by at its closest point, Art, in 60,000 years keeps coming back to me. And what about a tractor pull effect on the Earth that would bring it slightly closer to the sun? Not enough to burn it to a crisp, but more than less than the 98 million miles of the orbit that we've had for quite some time. And maybe it is a cycle that we're going through.
I don't think there's been any measurable change in our orbit.
Well, I've heard people even say to me the sun seems a little bigger these days, or it seems like it's not coming from east to west in the exact same position in the sky as it used to. But
I'll tell you who noticed that. My wife sure noticed that. She got here to North America, and she said, my God, the sun is just, it's not really coming up. It's just going from one little corner over to the other.
Wow, my dad just mentioned it too, eh? Okay, how about an axis tilt? How about an axis tilt, Art?
I think these are easily measured things, and I don't think I hope we're not tilting.
Yeah, but say a planetary body would have enough gravitational pull of the mass itself, not enough to pull it out of the orbit, but to just pull it along slightly, and this happens every 60,000 years, maybe triggers an ice age.
I'll tell you
we
what, you listen to my guest coming at the top of the hour, and I think he'll make a pretty strong case for what the sun is doing, all right?
Wow, thanks, Art. You know what? I wish I had more time to spend with Art. This is great.
Take care. That was funny. That really was humorous. When Erin got here, she went outside in the middle of the day, which, of course, is very short. That's the other thing she noticed. She said, my God, the days are very short here. I said, yes, well, you're in a different part of the world. And then she noted that the sun never really comes up. It tracks across the sky. What I should do is run her up to Alaska and let her get a look at that. All you ever get up there is about a sunset, and then it's or sunrise, and then it's setting as soon as it has arisen. In fact, it never really gets much above the horizon at all. But that's quite a change from where we were down on the equator, where everything is very similar day to day, season to season. If you can call them seasons, it's pretty much the same all year long. You have summer and the rainy season, which is still summery. Just have some rain. East of the Rockies, you're on the air, Jim, in Missouri.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Welcome back to the United States of America.
The good old USA, yes, sir.
You bet. God bless you and Erin and your cats.
Thank you.
I know that calling from Kansas City, Missouri, 710 Talk Radio. We love you in Kansas City.
Thank you.
Listen to you for a long time, but I know you like ghost stories.
I do.
And I have a real ghost story that happened on Katmai Street there in Las Vegas over by Sunrise Mountain.
Really?
You may know the area.
Oh, yes.
And it happened in May of 1993. I was out on the West Coast. A co-worker and friend of mine invited me to take a trip down to Las Vegas with him. I have to kind of set this up. He had just inherited a trailer home there on Katmai Street. His mother had recently passed away just a couple of weeks before that. And he hadn't been back to the house, the trailer home, since then. And he asked me to go with him. So I said, yeah, let's go. And so we arrived there at the trailer home. And as I walked in, I noticed just a very unusual feeling, like needles and pins, you know, a presence. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Oh, yes.
And so we went on in, and to the left was the kitchen. I have to kind of set this up a little bit. The kitchen was to the left in a hallway that went into the living room. But we walked straight in, and there was another hall that went into the living room off to the left, kind of a U-shaped. And he said, your bedroom is here. He said, this is my mother's room, and I'm going to sleep back here in this back bedroom. I said, okay. So it was about daylight. We got in, I guess we got in about 3 o'clock, and it was about around daylight, because I was in bed, and I just woke up with a startle. And just at the very end of the bed was this very small person standing there. And, of course, I was shocked, and you know, I was just dismayed and disoriented, and I thought I was, you know, having delusions or something. But I noticed that I thought it was a child, but it was a very tiny lady, older lady with silver hair, and she had this long house coat on that had roses and rickrack and these large buttons on it. And she looked at me kind of startled, probably as startled as I was, and she said, "Everything was all right." Well, no sooner had she appeared, she just kind of dematerialized in front of me and looks like she went through the door. And, well, I pulled the covers up over my head and laid back down. I thought I was hallucinating. And then just a little while later, I heard this knocking on the door. Well, it was my buddy, and he came up, he just knocked on the door, and he said, "Jim, get up." He says, "Let's go have some breakfast. I made a pot of coffee, and if you want to watch TV, go in the living room and watch TV." Well, so I got up, went around to the right into the living room, and as I walked in, on a small table, there was a portrait of this silver-haired lady. Well,
and that obviously was her.
Very unusual.
That was so, Mom.
I walked in, I poured a cup of coffee, and I realized that it was his mother that came to me in my bedroom and told me, and I was to give him a message that everything was all right. Well,
did you?
I went on in, and a few minutes later, he came out, and I said, "Is that a picture of your mother there on the table there in the living room?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Was your mother kind of petite, kind of small?" He says, "Yeah, she was only about 4'6". Well, I thought, well, okay, I got to tell him this. This is just, I just couldn't keep it in. So I said, "Your mother came to me last night, and she wanted me to let you know that everything was all right." Well, he said, "Thank you." And we sat there for just a moment, and I said, "Yeah." I said, "She had this long house coat on with the rickrack around the collar and the sleeves and these large buttons, and it had roses all over it."
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he says, "That was her favorite house coat."
Huh.
He says, "Jim, come with me." And we walked into the bedroom, and he threw open the sliding glass door, and he reached in and kind of shuffled around a little bit, and he pulled out this little house coat with the rickrack along the collar, and along the sleeves,
mm-hmm.
and the big buttons, and the roses all over it.
Well, I guess he should have been the one to sleep in that room, not you, but there you go. You got the message. I guess it can work that way.
Yeah.
And now I guess as a result of that, you believe absolutely, don't you, in life after death?
Absolutely, Art. Absolutely.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much for the call. I suppose that's all it takes is one absolutely convincing experience. West of the Rockies in Indio, California, you're on the air.
Hello,
Michael.
Hello, Art. Welcome back to America. And
thank you. Not a lot of time here.
I know. I'm glad to hear your cats came home safe and sound. Yeah, I wonder if you saw that CNN news documentary about the growth of radical Islam in Europe, and that really concerns me because of the current political conditions around the world, especially the growth of radical Islam in
Europe. Not just Europe, buddy. It's all over.
Yes.
Even where I just came from, mm-hmm. in the Philippines, on Mindanao, it's really pretty widespread.
Yeah, it's also getting widespread in Australia and North America. You're aware of that, terror cells.
I am, yes.
Yeah, and I hope Aaron adapts to North American life. And this is a little ice age we're having, by the way. So this global warming.
A little ice age. Yeah, it was quite a greeting for her. And again tonight,
well,
we're having weather into the upper 20s, along with 20 and 30 mile an hour winds tonight.
Ooh. That it's going to be very cold for the desert. In fact, we're having global climate change, I think. Not necessarily global warming, but cooling in some parts of the world.
Well, if it cooled off a little bit here, it wouldn't be all that serious. All right, I've got to run. Thank you. And take care. All right, we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we've got some serious work to do with one John J. Harper. Stay right where you are.